Weird thing. When you elect agitators instead of leaders, you get yourself absolutely screwed up.
I don't
have
the answers. We're actually making this up as we go along.
Beyond.
If there were easy solutions, Seattle probably would not have elected a woman mayor.
All.
That is an act of war to invest in white supremacy and terrorism with this bunker.
Recognition and everything starts to stink like Seattle spirit. Oh. Now, honestly, tell me something. Can you smell it? You heard about the firefighters going in now in pairs and six people when they go to the jungle. The jungles, when they go to go see Durka-Durka-Durka-Durkaville. When they go see Mike O'Brienville.
Don't drop that Durka-Durk. Hey, don't drop that Durka-Durk.
The street people there know they're not going to get put in jail. Right, Heroin Dan Satterberg?
Our incarceration rate in the state of Washington is among the 10 lowest in the United States.
The young street people know they're not going to face prison time, right? Smack Daddy Dow Constantine?
Since 2002, we've reduced the average daily population of young people in the juvenile system at the Youth Services Center from 212 to fewer than 50.
They know that nothing's going to get done with the Seattle City Council. Ain't that the truth, Mike O'Brien?
As a city, we have no plan.
And they know that even though all the facts say stuff is breaking down, that Seattle's becoming Detroit, that there's even awakenings amongst the citizens of Queen Anne and Magnolia and Wallingford, of all places, waking up and saying, why are we paying all these taxes? They know the reason why nothing's going to get done, right, Sleepy J?
It's based on ideology and politics rather than the facts on the ground.
That's exactly right. What a lineup of leaders I can turn to anytime I need a quote, anytime at all. You'd think that with open heroin dealing in downtown Seattle, our part-time attorney general, full-time seeker of campaign donation sideshow, Bob would have something to say.
The law matters.
Yeah, right. Exactly right. Well, our firefighters, we talked at the 3 o'clock about our police force. A whole bunch of cops, young cops, they're done leaving the Seattle force because they're sick of being disrespected and their lives being put at risk and they can't be the heroes they wanted to be. It's happening to our firefighters, right? Let's get an explanation from someone who's an actual reporter. So joining me now in the studio, Cairo Radio investigative reporter Hannah Scott has been following the story of the escalation of steps to protect our firefighters and paramedics in our area. And reported, you first broke the story. Hannah, welcome, by the way.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah, you broke the story about the number of firefighters now going to these scenes has doubled and maybe tripled. I heard about bulletproof vests from you, but you got something more.
Yeah, absolutely. After we ran the original story, the union president for Seattle Firefighters reached out and said, look, this new policy in Pioneer Square of doubling the units in certain areas there is just the tip of the iceberg. He says this area has been a concern for several years, safety concern, but with the increased level of homeless on the streets, they've seen a massive escalation in violence against firefighters when they respond to calls in Pioneer Square and in homeless encampments around the city.
We respond to shelters in Pioneer Square where services are provided, and the people either on the street or in the shelters are increasingly aggressive and actually assaulting firefighters in a way that we just haven't seen before.
So those assaults, to give you an idea, he says, can be just really confrontational behavior surrounding them, like we heard about, that led to that doubling of units, and also hitting, spitting, yelling, grabbing at them, really, one, impeding their ability to take care of whatever patient they're trying to care for and making an already dangerous job much more risky.
Oh, it's insane. You know, I'm on tomorrow. I guest host occasionally for Rush Limbaugh. So I get to share these stories. The first time I filled in for Rush, I told a bunch of Seattle stories. And, you know, the people in New York sent me a note saying, will you please tell everybody that you're not joking and that you're not lying? Because people don't believe what's going on in our area. Mm-hmm. So in this conversation, I mean, this is basically what we've heard about before is the cliched tip of the iceberg. So there's much, much more.
There's much, much more. And look, I want to stress that this is Kenny Stewart, the head of the Seattle Firefighters Union, said this is not all homeless people we're talking about.
Sure.
Many of them, they're actually there trying to help. Those end up being the patients that they're calling for. But there's like two separate populations of homeless on our streets, and a good portion of them are these people who are being violent and really targeting them, and that's a problem. And it's something that they want. They've been in discussions with the city to try to deal with this for some time. And his point to me was we need to get this coordinated effort, both with the mayor, the city council, prosecutors, both the city attorney and King County Prosecutor Dan Satterberg, and deal with this so that they can do their job. Because here's the deal. This isn't their job.
And as firefighters, we don't want to be focusing on de-escalation training or any type of, you know, physically aggressive training that involves us, you know, providing a security force. Our job is to help people.
And he says that it's also important to note that this is not, well, it's dangerous for them. He says they see it all the time. Tourists, people who work in the area being targeted, including, you know, Cairo 7's Gary Horker and his cameraman who had an incident down at Union Gospel Mission just a couple of days ago. He actually pointed that out to me. He said, that's something that we have to deal with every day. That was a woman with the garrote. And he said, it's dangerous for everyone. And the city absolutely needs to act urgently.
Hannah Scott's with us at the Cairo Radio. She's an investigative reporter, been here all day, so a little tired. But, you know, you mentioned the two populations. I've been asking the media to start saying there are homeless people. There are hardcore homeless. What I mean is that people who have now sort of adjusted to that lifestyle and that maybe feel a little comfortable there, but they'll take help and become persuaded for it. Homeless people, yeah, they'll accept the help, right? They've fallen on hard times. They missed a couple mortgage payments. That happens.
Yeah.
They'll accept help. But we have street people, Hannah, in our area, and they are ruling the streets, and they've been shown by example they rule the streets. And you mentioned, and I know you're a news reporter, so you can't come with me on this. There's a reason I call Heroin Dan Satterberg, Heroin Dan Satterberg, because he is welcoming these behaviors here. He brags about not putting people in jail. He brags about low incarceration rates. I guess I have bad news for the gentleman who's the head of the firefighters union. You're not going to get help. The city council won't do anything. Have you seen any signs that they get the street people run this area?
I have not. I have not. And I have some calls out to Bruce Harrell and some other members on the city council to try to find out. He's always been a big supporter of you know, police in general.
Right.
And it's, I think, given this being out here now, the threats, especially to firefighters. I even spoke today with the vice president of the Seattle Police Union to see if cops are seeing the same thing. He said, absolutely. But they're concerned about what firefighters do. And that's one of the things that the firefighters union said, because, you know, why aren't cops going out on every call? He says they're stretched too thin.
Well, I just talked to, before I had you on, I had Jason Rantz on with an exclusive story, a few segments ago. And Jason has found out that there's a mass exodus of cops going on, that they don't feel respected. How have you spoken with rank and file firefighters, if they feel respected about their job, or do they feel like the city council respects them?
I'm going to tell you, this story came to me, the original story about the doubling of units, from a tip from someone who works within the department who was quite frustrated about that particular issue.
And the issue of respect.
The issue of having backup from the city.
Carefully said by a professional investigative reporter doing her job really well. Hannah Scott, thank you so much for joining us. And I know the story's on MyNorthwest.com, correct?
It is, yes.
All right. Thanks for joining us.
You bet.
The madness continues. Listen to this chant. It's hard to hear. What they're saying is, F your borders, F your walls. We will make your system fall.
We will make your system fall.
So it's a 45-minute countdown to the agitators down at the Northwest Detention Facility to clear out of the way. Lastly, on a local basis, King 5's Natalie Brand went and talked to a couple of union workers about the ruling out of the Supreme Court, which simply says the government employees' unions can't force you to pay dues. And they can't, in that way, force you to join.
Washington actually has one of the highest union membership rates in the country. Now, today's decision impacts only public sector employees. That's state, county, and local workers, as well as healthcare workers employed by UW.
This has given us an opportunity to have real conversations with our coworkers about the importance of our union. And by far, the large majority have all said that they're going to continue paying their dues, supporting the union.
We need to focus on talking with our members. We need to focus on showing what the value is of unions. I think it's going to grow the power and the numbers of union members that we have, because we'll be doing much more direct organizing.
I got an idea. maybe you guys could stop earning 4 to 5 to 6 to 7 to 8 to 9 to 10 to 11 to 12 times the amount of money the people you pretend to represent. Just a thought. We'll come back on the Todd Herman Show. Breaking news in the shooting in Maryland. 5 people, as you know, have lost their lives. The shooter apparently mutilated part of his body. Parts of his body. An update on the shooting in Annapolis, Maryland, which, by the way, is maybe one of the prettiest cities back there I've ever been to. 5 people lost their life, and now on the shooter. Fox News and, in fact, the Capital Gazette, which is where the shooting occurred, are reporting that the shooter, the alleged shooter, may have mutilated his fingers in an attempt to be difficult to identify. Now, they're being very careful here, saying, oh, well, maybe they were mutilated during the shooting. But it looked like he had mutilated his fingers to be difficult to identify. That didn't work because police were able to identify him using using facial recognition technology. And at this point, he's not cooperating. And there are, of course, on Twitter, people tying this to Milo Yiannopoulos, who had said that that people should. Well, I don't know. I don't know the exact quotes. I want to be careful. But Milo said something along the lines of journalists are going to deserve it when they get shot. Something along those lines. So people are already tying it to that. Evil exists in the world. It does. And the belief that enough stacks of paper and enough lawyers can eradicate evil, it's not rational. Doesn't mean that we shouldn't try, and it doesn't mean that we shouldn't protect, but let's be rational. We can't eradicate crazy. It's part of the human condition. Was this guy crazy? I don't know. They don't know. We don't know a thing about him. That's why I've been talking a lot about it. I'll be honest with you. I tire of getting into shooting cases like this and pretending to know what's going on and the media pretending to know what's going on. No one knows right now. We know 5 people are dead. And I find it ghoulish, to be frank with you, to sit and make things up or to repeat the same information. I'll leave that to cable news, MSNBC. They can run this on loop for the next 3 days. As soon as they get the picture of the killer, they'll run his name and his picture 25 times a second. So just make sure that the guy gets the fame he probably wanted. Someone who didn't want fame got infamy. There is finally a movie coming out about Curtis Gosnell. Do you remember him? So Gosnell was just a flat monster. He was a guy who ran what was supposed to be an abortion clinic in Philadelphia. And it turned into, abortion in and of itself can be horrific and is horrific, but it turned into something that is beyond the imagination. If you don't know the case, there's a reason why you don't. A, you're really young. B, the media hid this like you wouldn't believe. There's finally a movie coming out in October. It's called Gosnell, The Trial of America's Biggest Serial Killer. When they finally went into this guy's clinic, where young women had been dying and had been left on the street corner drugged, where young women had changed their mind about having an abortion, and Gosnell basically forced them to have the abortion, where he used what's called snipping. And if you've got young kids, take them away from the radio for about a minute. 3, 2, 1. Snipping. You pull a live, living, viable, more than viable, perfectly healthy human being from the mother and snip spinal column, the base of the neck. And it didn't always kill the babies right away. He stored body parts. It was horrific. The law enforcement who investigated this, who went into that clinic, described a bit of this in court.
It was bloodstained walls, bloodstained beds and unclean sheets. They found jar after jar after jar filled with fetal remains, and specifically severed feet in jars. They found medical waste bags just strewn everywhere.
The sewers coming out of his building were clogged with body parts. Now, I want you to imagine something. If he had not been an abortionist, but had been a non-abortionist serial killer with body parts stored, who killed in this manner, who flushed body parts down the toilet, who drugged young women and did this to them, left them on street corners alive, barely, who had, let's say, been a respected teacher or respected cop, the media would have been engrossed in this. If you don't remember, when the trial began, there were maybe 12 to 15 reporters there, most of them, if not all of them, local newspaper reporters. The dead media didn't cover this. It took Congress using their bully pulpit. It took a massive social media campaign. I was part of that. You may have been. To shame the national media into finally covering this. There's a young woman who spoke in a documentary about her experience in this clinic. Again, imagine if this had been, say, a non-abortion doctor, non-abortionist. Let's say it was a young woman who'd gone in to, let's say, have an organ removed and decided she didn't want to do it.
I came in and they finally called my name. And I went upstairs. And I remember just walking through and looking, and I seen some women that looked half dead in these bloody recliner chairs. There was blood all over the floor. And I just kept going.
This young woman said that she was raped, said that she learned she was pregnant, said she'd fallen with the wrong crowd. Even though with that the case, she sat down in this filthy, disgusting house of death, and she decided...
I didn't see him until I was hooked up with IVs, and when they put the heart monitor around me, that's when I decided I can't do this.
So she did not want to go through this. Imagine, again, let's say that she's there to have plastic surgery. She says, I don't want to do this. Or she's there to have a dental procedure. She says, I can't do it. I'm afraid. I don't want to do it. And let's say she was forced to go through it by a doctor. Would the national media have hidden this? So she didn't want to do it, but...
She's like, oh, stop being a little baby, and he's pounding on my leg. Stop being a little baby. And now I'm outnumbered because all these women came in and I'm like tied to the bed. And next thing I know, I was out of it.
Yep. Imagine if it had not been abortion. Imagine if it had been just, I don't mean just, but it had been a serial killer who was an accountant. Imagine if a doctor forced a woman to go through with a hysterectomy. Well, media would be rightly outraged. They hid this. It's a sacrament to some. It is. It's a religious sacrament to some. And to the media, it is sacred. The movie comes out in October. It's hitting 750 theaters, barely a blip, but a pretty big one for an independent film. We'll make sure to get the filmmakers on the show and talk about it. Todd Herman Show will continue. Another huge day in Capitol Hill. Jim Jordan against Rosenstein, and news about Peter Strzok and his behind-door interview with the FBI. He didn't show up alone. Thanks for listening to the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH and on the podcast. If you don't have the podcast yet, just text the word podcast to 800-465-8770. We'll remedy that right now. Get you on the podcast. Man, it's a huge news day, isn't it? Jim Jordan versus Rod Rosenstein. Before you hear the clip, a reminder of some things. Rosenstein hid, or the FBI and DOJ, hid from the United States Congress. They've hidden the scope of the investigation. They will not share that. They will not share the actual origination documents. They have redacted huge portions of what they've sent to the Congress. They hid from the Congress the text message where Peter Strzok, and we'll get to him, where Peter Strzok said to Lisa Page, his adulterous lover, Trump will not be elected. We'll stop him. They hid that. They hid voluminous amounts of text that the IG then brought forward. They did not voluntarily bring to the Congress the fact that they lied about the source of the dossier. They didn't want to share that at all. They have consistently hidden and continue to hide from the Congress documents that have been subpoenaed and demanded. Well, they've not been subpoenaed yet. They've been demanded for over 16 months. Trey Gowdy has warned, you guys are going to give us these things or we will first subpoena, then impeach, so that we all have an understanding. There is no argument that can be made that the DOJ and the FBI aren't hiding things. Listen to this arrogance, this unbridled arrogance from a guy, Rod Rosenstein, who's talking to one of his superiors, an elected official. Rosenstein does not work for a co-equal branch of government. He was not elected. He is talking to one of his superiors.
Mr. Rosenstein, why are you keeping information from Congress?
Congressman, I'm not keeping any information from Congress that it's appropriate.
In a few minutes, Mr. Rosenstein, I think the House of Representatives is going to say something different.
I don't agree with you, Congressman. I don't believe that's what they're going to say. And if they do, they'll be mistaken.
I disagree, but I think in a few minutes, the House of Representatives is going to go on record saying you haven't complied with requests from a separate and equal branch of government, that you haven't complied with subpoenas, and you got 7 days to get your act together. I think that's what's going to happen in a few. And that's not Jim Jordan. I think that's the House. I think that's a majority of the House of Representatives. In just a few minutes, I think that's going to happen. And I want to know why you won't give us what we've asked for.
Do you hear the arrogance? Because what he starts to say is, we've given you what we've decided. And what he means is you should see what we, a non-elected body, have decided you, an elected body, should see. What we, the people speaking to our superiors, what we, the inferior branch, has decided that we will share with you, the superior branch. Again, try it at work. I invite you to try it at work. Try it with a cop. Hi, sir. Stopped you today going 72 and a 55. License, registration, proof of insurance, please. I'm not going to be giving those to you. I could be on my way now. Thanks. Try that. Or give it to them in redacted form. Try that. Sure. Let me get that for you. Sir, what are you doing? Just hold on. Sir, is that a pen? Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and redact some information here on my driver's license and my proof of insurance. There you go. And in that case, you're dealing with one of your employees who we've hired to govern us. Well, we hired Jim Jordan to govern us, not Rod Rosenstein. Trey Gowdy had his hair, Gowdy's, I counted 71 separate hairdos. Today, combed, and I believe to the right, and rather nicely.
Precisely the same time that Bob Mueller was appointed, precisely the same time, Peter Strzok was talking about his unfinished business and how he needed to fix and finish it so Donald Trump did not become president. He was talking about impeachment within 3 days of special counsel Mueller being appointed. 3 days. That's even quicker than MSNBC and the Democrats were talking about impeaching.
Yep. Rosenstein has 7 days, and I actually think Gowdy will get Ryan to follow through. I actually think the subpoenas come, and if they don't follow through, I actually think they will impeach Rosenstein and this leadership, including Christopher Wray. Now, as all that's going on, Strzok is behind closed doors giving an interview. Strzok, who said, oh, yeah, I'll come in. Oh, I can't wait to tell my story. I'll come in. Absolutely. Congress waited. Is he coming in? Oh, I'm getting there. I'm fixing to come in. We need you to come in. I'm working on it. They subpoenaed him, or I think they were going to subpoena him, and then he said, okay, I'll come in. So in comes Strzok, who is being questioned individually about his role in "Don't worry, we'll stop Trump. Don't worry, we have an insurance policy." They're interviewing Strzok about his statement that at last I get to work on an investigation that can lead to impeachment. They're interviewing Strzok about he and Page working together to set up a dinner, which was a ruse, so they could sit and try to convince a judge to do more for them. So they set up this dinner as a ruse. They're getting ready to interview him about all these things, about what is the insurance policy, all that, because he's ready to come clean. He's got to put his name right. And he's anxious to do it, and he's walking in, and here comes Peter Strzok, and he walks into the closed doors. Well, I'm here. Let's have at it. I'm ready for your question. Hold on. Oh, I got some people joining me. And in comes guy number one. Hi, how you doing? Nice to meet you. Guy number two. Hello. Right. Let's get going. Guy number three. Dudes. And Congress says, who are they? Oh, that's my first FBI lawyer. That's my second FBI lawyer. That guy there is my third FBI lawyer. Hours of testimony. And I can never say this guy's name the right way, but I like him. Bob Goodlatte, or Goodlot. He needs to change his name for the convenience of radio hosts. He talked about the three lawyers. He talked about the difficulty. He came outside the session for a little while in the 10th hour. And he went and spoke with Martha McCallum on Fox News.
We're now in the 10th hour, and we have still many more questions to ask. However, unfortunately, the FBI counsel in the room has instructed Mr. Strzok not to answer many, many questions. And that's going to be a serious problem.
So if we're keeping track, that's the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. He was elected by elected officials to lead the committee responsible for the oversight of a subsidiary branch of government below them in status and power. And this inferior branch's lawyers are saying, don't answer. Sometimes if I don't laugh, I get this feeling where my aorta will stretch outside my neck and it looks like I'm growing a little, you know, like a little Nancy Pelosi on the side of my neck. Ah! Low trust society. It's what it looks like to me. Low trust society. Why on earth? Part of me wishes I would get investigated publicly by a Democrat congressional body, because I'd love to say, Senator, at this point will like to plead. You're going to take the Fifth Amendment? No, I plead the Strzok rule. The what? The Strzok rule. I'm not talking. Ain't no Strzok rule. Well, there was when we were in charge. There was a Strzok rule. That aorta thing's happening. It looks like a little Nancy Pelosi head on me. All right, well, we will wrap the day up with a personal note right next.
Down on Main Street.
Welcome back to the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH and in the Greater East Side, 94.5 FM. On a personal note tonight, have you ever heard of the imposter syndrome? This is something that I was unaware of until I was probably 23 or 24 years old. The imposter syndrome is believing that you don't belong in a certain circumstance. Now, what would put my mind around the imposter syndrome? Well, it is the fact that once again tomorrow, for the seventh time, I will be honored to fill in for the most famous and successful radio talk show host who has ever lived, and in all likelihood, really, truly, in all likelihood, will ever live. Now, Rush Limbaugh, obviously. Now, I make that statement not to kiss up to Rush. Rush will never hear this conversation you and I are having right now. Rush is too busy to do that. I make that statement because I am not that guy. I am not the most successful talk show host in history. I'm not a national talk show host. And yet I get this opportunity to stand in place for a guy who in reality is the Johnny Carson of this format. And it's undeniable. The reach of that program is staggering in numbers. It's, I think, now above 25 million people who listen to that program on a weekly basis. I don't know what the average quarter hour is. That means who's listening every 15 minutes. But it's immense, and it's much, much larger than anything that's going on in TV when you break it down into an average quarter hour like that. It is enormous. Now, standing in that position, right, for the first time, it was the strangest thing. I thought I was calm. I thought I was calm until the music began. I thought I was calm, right, the first time I did it. And I remember standing there thinking, okay, I'm going to be okay. I'm going to be good. I'm not going to have nerves. Wow, I'm going to make it through this without nerves. And then we had some engineering problems and some challenges. And it's the first time we did this from the studio. And the team from New York was running our team here, how to work the phones, et cetera. And we just had a hiccup. So, okay, I'll deal with that. All right, be good. But when the before you go on for Rush, they play in your headphones. They're playing the best of Rush's parodies, which are hilarious. And so that's relaxing. And they do that for the affiliates so that they know that the feed is working. But I groove on that. And Mike and the team and Allie and the team in New York, now they know that that really helps calm me down. So Michael picks some of my favorites to just get me calmed down. So I thought I was all good. And then it went silent. It went silent. And I didn't know how long the silence was going to last. And then it's satellite tone. Boop. Boom, 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 boom. And I just went straight into imposter mode. The imposter syndrome is that you can't possibly be the person you've become. You can't possibly be in this role. And it hit me like a mountain landed on me. And I'll tell you, honest to goodness, I halfway expected someone from New York to come rushing into the studio and go, wait. Oh my God, we made this insane mistake. This guy grew up a punk kid in Spokane, Washington, who didn't cut his hair, got expelled from sixth grade, was put in constant states of suspension throughout junior high, both in school and out of school suspension. There were teachers who predicted this young guy was going to go to prison by the time he was 18 and told that to parents of some of his friends. This can't be the guy that's filling in for Rush Limbaugh. All of that washed over me. And consequently, those who listened to the first time I filled in for Rush, if you know me well, you know I was really nervous. Right now, the team from New York, they're just incredible. So they've really helped calm me down. And after that first hour, Bo helped me calm me down. But the imposter syndrome lives within all of us. It does. You may realize this when you reach moments that are pinnacle-like. I also had it when we had raised a bunch of money for our first startup, which was called The Dial, which is an internet radio company. And I remember sitting in a boardroom at one point looking around, and I'm like, that guy's a millionaire? That guy's a millionaire? This guy's probably a billionaire. What the name of God am I doing here? What in the name of God am I doing here? The crazy thing is about the imposter syndrome. For those of us who come from a Christian perspective or from a Christian faith or from a lot of faith traditions, there's this plan that God has for us, and we can't understand it. We can't grasp it. The challenge is to listen to it. When I spoke at Michael Medved and Diane Medved's synagogue, And I for the life of me, I don't remember what we discussed. It was Diane's book, I think, and it was about the nature of relationships, and I had this, I was the moderator. That's what it was. I remember, why would I be speaking about the nature of relationships? They brought up a Jewish tradition, that there's a belief that there is a mate God has in mind for you. And there's, I forget the word, the Hebrew word for that, but there's a mate in the world, a match in the world God has in mind for you. And if you will listen to God and you will follow God and you will hear his voice, you will find that mate. Or there's a mate you choose because you don't listen to God's word, because you don't listen to his input. And I think that's true throughout our lives. I think sometimes we follow these paths and we want them very much to be our own. So as I now prepare tomorrow to fill in tomorrow morning from the studio, thank you, Bo, for flying out here. I owe you one. As I now prepare to fill in for Rush Limbaugh tomorrow, I realize something. My imposter syndrome happens when I forget I'm not fully in control. I have input into my life. I can choose to steer this way or that, but my heart beats, my DNA works, I'm able to draw breath because of the Lord. And sometimes he's going to put me in positions where that imposter syndrome will rise up, but I'm not his imposter, right? If he didn't want me here, I wouldn't be here. It's something to think about because I think it puts up barriers into what you're willing to believe you can do, the imposter syndrome. I still would appreciate your prayers tomorrow, because you know what? I'm still going to be nervous. I really am. This is the Todd Herman Show. We air every weekday, 3 to 6 p.m. I'll see you tomorrow at 9 a.m. for Rush's show, and then at 3 o'clock for mine. Be well, be strong, and be kind.